Hi, Arthur Stamoulis. Welcome to KABU.
Thanks for having me.
Arthur Stamoulis is now the director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. In a prior position, he was coordinator of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. Now, living in Philadelphia, working in Washington a lot, he organizes and writes and lobbies, and he also coordinates the National Citizen Trade Campaign. The National Campaign is seeking radical changes in trade laws, not against trade or for protection, but in favor of robust trade between countries, but importantly, fair trade. So, Arthur, Trump campaigned on opposing trade deals, renegotiating them, making them fair for Americans, bringing back jobs here. Now, 6 months later, there's a series of trade negotiations going on. They've begun renegotiation of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, most prominent. It's beginning in a week or two. Arthur, tell us about Trump's amazing change of position.
Yeah, well, you know, I think people know Trump got into office in large part exploiting really justified public anger over our trade policies that offshore jobs, that drive down wages, and that privilege corporate elites at the expense of the majority. So he promised voters that he was going to change that he would either make our trade agreements better for working people or he would eliminate them altogether. That got him a lot of votes in Midwest swing states like Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania, and is a big part of what propelled him into the White House. Since taking office, he's begun the process of renegotiating NAFTA, and just recently his administration published their plan for renegotiating NAFTA. This is a plan that U.S. law requires them to send to Congress.
Actually was leaked, right? In fact, they didn't publish it.
A copy of it was leaked in March, but the actual public plan was published in mid-July, required by U.S. law that they send this to Congress 30 days before they begin negotiations. And that plan fails to take the steps needed to replace NAFTA with a deal that's going to work for working families. Instead, it relies very heavily on language from past business-as-usual trade agreements that have privileged corporate interests over working families, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Trump had railed against.
A lot of the passages are just copied from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I mean, they're virtually identical is what I've read.
No, yeah, large sections of it are verbatim, word for word, identical to the negotiating objectives from the TPP. So this is hardly a transformative plan. At best, you could call it vague, and at worst, it's a path to make NAFTA even worse for working families, let alone for the environment.
Arthur, let's go into the details of that. How is that? One of them is people have often said, and correctly, that these are not trade agreements. What they are is corporate protection agreements. And the corporations they're protecting are the big multinationals, and not just protecting, but advancing their interests by putting them into a position where they can just do whatever they want around the world in many ways and have the U.S. government protecting them through these trade laws.
One of the very worst aspects of NAFTA and many of our subsequent trade agreements are these extraordinary protections for transnational corporations. There's a provision in NAFTA called Investor State Dispute Settlement, ISDS, and what it allows is for big corporations that cross borders to challenge any law, any regulation, any permitting decision that they believe violates the agreement before not the U.S. court system or any other country's court system, but a panel of three corporate attorneys who often go back and forth between serving as judges on these tribunals and actually working as lawyers for the corporations. And they can insist that governments pay these corporations unlimited amounts of taxpayer dollars if they find that a law or regulation or a permitting decision is in violation. So corporations have used these to attack environmental laws, food safety laws, you name it. Our domestic laws and every other country's domestic laws in real jeopardy of attack. But beyond that, it also creates an incentive for corporations to move jobs overseas because they don't get these benefits if they're investing and creating jobs domestically. They only get them if they're investing cross-border.
Even if you're in violation of, let's say, the lead and gasoline laws in the United States, all you have to do is move to Ireland, and then you can challenge U.S. law. Is that a...
Yeah, no. It was,
or Ireland or anywhere else. Mexico, go right across the border and bring the stuff in. That's a wonderful provision for corporate manufacturers.
Yeah, I mean, right now, there are only certain trade agreements that have this ISDS provision, but certainly there's been claims of corporations summit hopping and you know, sort of shifting their assets from branch to branch to try to take advantage of the best free trade agreement or bilateral investment treaty to use these provisions. These investor privileges are one thing where if you were trying to create replacement to NAFTA that was good for working people, that's one of the things you would immediately do. You'd get rid of that.
Well, you would at least have transparency, right? And also make sure that your tribunals are, the judges, in fact, are not the minions and the servants of the biggest companies.
Even beyond that, Bill, does anyone think that you, big corporations don't get a fair shake in the U.S. court system? We don't need a parallel system of justice for the exclusive use of transnational corporations, right? If a corporation has a problem with a law, with a regulation, a permitting decision, it should take them through the U.S. court system, or if it's in another country, through that country's court system. It doesn't need private tribunals to adjudicate those. You know, U.S. citizens don't have access to those. The small businesses don't have access to those. If they don't like a law or regulation, there's no reason why transnational corporations should get a special justice system just for themselves.
One of the issues, it seems to me, that is now raised is that the international trade laws now and the kinds that are being negotiated would allow countries and medical suppliers and private hospital systems to sue people like the British are worried. They could sue the National Health Service and the British government, and the conservatives in government would like to see the National Health Services in England destroyed. Foreign companies could sue England, as it exists now, for not allowing them to build private hospitals or for regulating their drug prices or almost anything else, or for allowing some sorts of drugs that are dangerous as trade law violations.
Yeah, no, if a free trade agreement were negotiated between the United States and the UK, and just the other week, the U.S. began talks with the UK about about negotiating such a deal. Stuff like that, it certainly, if they followed the template of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which public pressure defeated, or the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, which thus far public pressure has defeated, if they followed that template, you know, that's exactly right. The national health system in England would be in serious jeopardy. And, you know, I'll say even in the NAFTA renegotiation plan, that's one of the sections, intellectual property rights, where the Trump administration lifted a lot of the language directly from the TPP negotiating objectives, language that, you know, doesn't talk about, hey, we need to make access to medicine more affordable for consumers. We need to make sure that people have access to the best quality health care out there. No, it talks about, hey, how can we use this agreement to extend the length of patents for the big pharmaceutical companies and make sure that they're raking in more dough.
And that means that countries like India and many other countries with production capacities and making drugs, life-saving drugs, much, you know, at one-tenth of the price of the American firms, they'd be put out of business by those kinds of trade. You would have to buy American or nothing.
Yeah, the Nobel Peace Prize-winning group Doctors Without Borders called the TPP the worst trade agreement ever for access to medicine, and this appears to be the template that the Trump administration is using for NAFTA and presumably for subsequent trade agreements, where, you know, the evergreen patents, meaning that a pharmaceutical company that gets a long patent for a drug, as soon as they find a new use for that same drug, they get an extension on their patent. You can just extend that period of time where they have a legal monopoly and are able to block out generic manufacturers. And as you say, a patented medication can easily be 10 times more the cost of a generic medication. And this is increasing healthcare costs in the United States and in poorer developing countries, I mean, it's a literal death sentence. People just simply cannot afford these patented medications.
Yeah, but it's good for investors, Arthur. Think of it that way.
I mean, this is what the president said. I'm going to make these trade agreements better for working people. And thus far, it seems to be that they're headed to making it even better for corporations instead.
Yeah. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety. Talking to Arthur Stamoulis of the Citizens Trade Campaign. He started his career in trade agitation and struggle here in Portland, part of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, now in Washington lobbying and trying to direct the whole organization. Arthur, let's talk about two important standards, the labor standards and the environmental standards of NAFTA, or in fact of any of the provisions being negotiated. They're there in NAFTA, actually. They're just not enforced, and they're fairly vague, both environment and labor. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so NAFTA includes labor and environmental standards as side agreements. So they're not even in the core text of the agreement. The Trump administration's plan on labor and environmental standards, again, is identical to previous administration's plans for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, and other trade agreements that are in effect. So one of the standards is that, hey, countries are required to have minimum wage laws and laws pertaining to maximum hours of work per day, but it doesn't spell out what those standards are. So a country can have a minimum wage of $1 a day and a maximum number of hours worked at 24 hours a day and still be in compliance. So they're a joke. And then other labor provisions have to do with the right to organize a union and freedom from forced labor and things like that. But again, the standards are so vague that thus far they've been completely impossible to enforce. And these are labor standards that are wholeheartedly endorsed by the Chamber of Commerce and other corporate lobbies and universally panned by labor organizations in this country and many others. It's like, look, these are window dressing.
And the environmental standards are similar?
The environmental standards are quite similar. It's interesting. The George W. Bush administration, at least on paper, required enforcement of 7 multilateral environmental agreements, you know, essentially environmental treaties. The Trump plan that was released the other week talks about enforcing 1 of those 7. So a rollback already in that regard, let alone, you know, not saying anything, obviously, on climate change, you know, one of the biggest issues facing humanity today, completely silent on that. So, you know, in my opinion, these labor and environmental standards, I mean, not only are they completely inadequate to protect jobs at home and human rights abroad, but again, they're window dressing. They're thrown in there so that they can say they're doing something for the public when really they're not.
Now, there was one issue that where there was some action, actually, right? And the Amazon rainforest issue. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so 10 years ago, the Peru Free Trade Agreement under the George W. Bush administration was the first trade agreement to have in the core text these labor and environmental standards, and supposedly these were, you know, a great leap forward, but they were supposed to take care of illegal logging in the Amazon, which is a huge problem for endangered species. It's also a major problem with forced labor in that sector.
And not to mention the climate of the planet.
No kidding, yeah. No. But, you know, 10 years later, the illegal logging continues virtually unabated. There's been no enforcement case that's been seen to fruition that's tried to impose any penalty whatsoever. Illegal logging continues to happen hugely. Environmental activists continue to be literally killed trying to fight the practice in the Amazon. And by and large, it's been a joke. It's been a sick joke. And yeah, this is one of the things that was used to sell that trade agreement. There's no talk of improving the standards, learning from that, you know, those mistakes and improving the standards to actually make sure the environment is protected, that labor rights are protected. You know, these are the standards that are being offered to us still.
Arthur, before we end, let's talk about the NAFTA town hall that's happening in Portland on August 10th at 7:30 p.m. I've got the details in front of me, and in fact, that is the detail. Learn about the unfolding NAFTA politics and what can be done. Again, it's Thursday, August 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Ask Me Consul 75 Hall. which is at 60th and East Burnside. It's right on the corner there, 6025 East Burnside. Arthur, what can be done? The town hall, of course, is one small component, but town halls all over the country are important in getting to the media and talking about trade and jobs and the solutions. Give us a sense of the politics of it.
So after seeing so many pro-NAFTA corporate lobbyists invited to testify at NAFTA hearings that were held in Washington, D.C., we decided to work on our own series of field hearings about NAFTA that are going to allow working people, family farmers, immigrants, small business owners, environmentalists, others to explain the impacts that NAFTA has had on their communities and what sort of changes they want to see in a real NAFTA replacement deal. So this is something we're doing this summer throughout the country, including the one you mentioned in Portland. One of the key things I'll say is, so this is August recess, congressional recess. This is the longest time in the entire year when members of Congress, you know, U.S. representatives, senators, are back home in district interacting with constituents. Most of the year, they're in D.C., they're taking meeting after meeting with corporate lobbyists. They're at fundraiser after fundraiser with corporate lobbyists. August through Labor Day is the time where they're back home in district, and they have to interact with voters, with their constituents face-to-face. So this is a critical moment for us to be putting the question to our elected officials, hey, is this NAFTA renegotiation for people or is it for corporations? You know, who's going to benefit from this? What are you doing to make the process transparent and to hold the Trump administration accountable? And I think the more we can raise that type of accountability, the better the chances we'll have at cutting off the worst possible sort of TPP 2.0 outcome of this renegotiation, and potentially over time actually get a better deal, which is what we all need.
Right. Arthur, one final thing. I want you to have the last word. Comment on my hypothesis that we have to really fight in these trade negotiations left for different trade laws. But one of the great things that it does is it talks about the planet and the entire trade regime and the way people live and work and share goods and share the planet. And what we can do is raise questions of what are the minimum standards that are necessary and then talk about how to build a international cooperation on raising the minimums for so many people living now on less than a dollar a day still in the world, and for making sure that people have shelter and medical care and work, and there is so much work to be done in environmental restoration. All of that, my hypothesis is, Arthur, that we want to link and also appeal to all the Sanders supporters. It seems to me that Sanders also ran on trade, and that resonated with the American people. It seems to me that it's quite possible to raise all of those questions in these town halls and around the country and talk about, you know, a very different way of managing the world economy and the world environment, especially the U.S., but of course all the other countries are damaging unto human extinction.
No, I think you're right. I mean, one of the big innovations of trade agreements is that, you know, they not only set rules governing the global economy, but they have enforcement mechanisms in them with real teeth that get governments to obey them. So unlike a environmental treaty or an arms treaty that, you know, largely rely on the goodwill of the governments involved, our trade agreements have mechanisms in there that are, you know, have very real penalties involved for violations that can force governments to change their actions.
They're unfortunately not used.
The problem is that they're used to force governments to extend the length of medicine patents and copyrights, and to prevent the use of environmental regulations and food safety regulations and things of that nature. They're not used right now to lift labor standards, to lift environmental standards, to set a floor for food safety and consumer right to know and things of that nature. We just need to flip the script. We need to create rules that are designed to benefit workers and consumers and the environment rather than to just benefit corporate profits. But the mechanisms are there. We just need the political will to make those very simple changes. And, you know, I'll say I was heartened in the last election that Bernie Sanders did so well, running in large part on the need to change our trade policies in that way. I think the Trump campaign was very cynical and had a very U.S. against the world sort of message when it came to trade instead of corporations against the world message. But I think he tapped into much of the same public anger around this issue. And I think if people just continue to hold elected officials accountable and not let them get away with these half measures and business as usual measures wrapped up in nationalist rhetoric, I think real change is possible. We just need to keep fighting.
Arthur Stamoulis of the Citizens Trade Campaign, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Well, thank you, Bill.
How the years passed again and the giving was good, with a lunch bucket filled every season. But with three babies born, the work was cut down to a half a day shift with no reason. Then the shaft was soon shut and my work was cut, and the fire in the air, it felt frozen. Till a man come to speak, and he said in 1 week that number 11 was closing. They complain in the east, they paying too high. They say that your ore ain't worth digging, that it's much cheaper down in the South American towns.
Close the door, please.
Where the miners work almost for nothing.